You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 4th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're taking stock of a turbulent week for the share prices of some big corporate players. Companies from auto to minerals have suffered serious declines. We'll track the moves and ask what has shaped the landscape. We'll ask how do recalibrations in single stock risk affect portfolios and ask what this sort of uncertainty means for the companies too. We'll hear from analysts and experts, as well as the advisors and strategists that help corporations to rebuild, both their share prices and reputations. We start with Jason Corian, senior Europe correspondent at Quartz. He charts a pretty extraordinary week.
The markets in general had a terrible third quarter across the world, and some of that was driven by things like Volkswagen, which is sort of a self-inflicted crisis, I guess you could say, whereas companies like Glencore and some others, it's more of a driven by the actual markets. But when those two things come together, you have a recipe for some pretty brutal conditions out there in the markets.
Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, responds to the turbulence affecting both VW and Glencore.
Well, that unfortunately while might seem relatively boring, the first rule of investing is diversification and not having huge bulk risks. Because in the case of both VW and Glencore, we're talking about investment-grade credits, which had an incredibly rough ride this week. You just have to look at the CDS of Glencore, and it hit almost 800 basis points, a huge jump up. And again, this is what is rated investment grade.
We'll consider the moves, stock price and boardroom chairs both, at VW in a moment, but first a view on Glencore. Miles Alsop is co-head of EMEA Mining Equity Research at UBS and has been charting a volatile week, and indeed a challenging year, for the company.
It's been a very volatile week. It's been a very challenging year as well. And there's been a clear shift in sentiment around the outlook for China and for commodity prices, which happened earlier in the year but has been gaining momentum. The concerns about the sort of operational and financial leverage of Glencore have been increasing. And certainly the move on Friday, which kind of rolled into Monday, where there's a speculation that the company is having serious financial difficulties, really had a massive impact on the share price. And for me, the stock was oversold. I think there is some falsehoods in the market and a lack of understanding of the balance sheet. When you look at the structure of the balance sheet, it is well structured. You look at it, they don't have any covenants. They don't have to do any refinancing in the bond markets until 2017. They've got very good liquidity, and the liquidity lasts into 2017 as well. So for me, there is no imminent credit crunch coming through. I think, the focus of the management team now is delivering on the promises that they set out on the 7th of September when they announced the equity issuance and the measures including reducing working capital, in terms of reducing the loan book, sort of improving the free cash flow from cutting the dividend and the capex. And more importantly, it's divestments. And I think that's going to be the key theme for Glencore over the next sort of 3 to 6 months of crystallizing some cash from this business from precious metal streaming transactions. And there'll probably be a series of those transactions over the next sort of 3 months or so. And from selling a stake in the agricultural products business.
At VW, meanwhile, we've seen some swift and decisive changes to personnel. The company is now in a state of transition. What will we see happen next? And perhaps crucially, will this reassure people? Jason Corian.
There is a very interesting branch of company research here that says that when you are tested so severely in a crisis like the one that's engulfed Volkswagen, the way that the company responds reveals new information about the management, about the company culture, about the way forward. And if a company can, navigate those crises in an appealing way, as far as the future is concerned, then, in fact, after the sort of initial dip in the share price, it can settle higher in the long term, given that, you know, markets and investors sort of know a bit more about the company. It's the classic sort of Nietzschean, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So in terms of what Volkswagen can do, though, I mean, this is a terrible scandal. It's totally self-inflicted. They were explicitly caught cheating. You know, it takes just the usual kind of openness and transparency. They need to move quickly. They need to be honest. They've had a pretty major management clear out there. There's probably more heads that will roll. You know, it's going to be a long road back, and the shares have just absolutely plummeted. And so, you know, getting back to anything near the company's previous value is going to be tricky, but it's certainly possible, I think, but it will require some very aggressive actions by the new regime there.
So why do some investors maintain these significant single stock risks? Does Simon Smiles think it's down to historical reasons, or perhaps because they think they understand these stocks better?
I think it comes into probably the latter point, feeling like they understand or being more comfortable with things they feel they understand. So we witness this across our entire client base, a huge degree of home bias. It manifests in different ways, but talking to clients in Hong Kong, they own a lot of Hong Kong stocks, and they're more reticent to invest in global stocks they're less familiar with, names that they don't see on a daily basis. That's true in the UK, but of course with UK companies and debt, you know, it's true in Australia where I come from. So that familiarity and perceived familiarity and comfort with investing in the familiar is definitely part of this. There's also an element, a large element of our client base who've made their money by building companies or indeed inherited companies that their families have built. And often that involves large, you know, bulk holdings in listed companies. It's very hard when a client's built a company to suggest, you know, diminishing the stake and diversifying because they often have an emotional tie to it.
Simon Smiles. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look beyond the markets and consider how companies facing crisis react. And we'll consider some broader lessons that perhaps they should pay heed to in the meantime. Let's look next at corporate reactions to crises of this nature, both historically and through the lens of this week's events. We sought the view of Susan Liotto, who deals with ethics, governance and reputational risk in big companies. We asked her, in terms of placing the travails of VW, for example, in context, is it useful to look at historic examples?
Well, I think historical awareness shows patterns. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One of the bad habits that we fall into with looking at ethics failures is that we look at the behavior, but we don't look at the forces driving the behavior. You might see them in an NGO where donor funds have been mishandled. You might see them in a case like Volkswagen, where we could presumably ask questions like, what was the big goal that was so important? Where was the pressure that was so serious that people were willing to make decisions that said we're going to cheat?
Looking ahead, what changes as a result of this crisis? Does Susan believe that that conversation is actually happening in boardrooms?
I think generally we're seeing more and more interest and more commitment to proper corporate governance and also to proper ethics infrastructure. So positions like chief ethics officer are becoming more and more common. When we look at corporate websites, we see more and more about various things like whistleblowing and various ethics policies and all of that. And I think that by and large, corporate boards are very competent, hardworking people. This is not always a group of very bad people or lazy people. But I do think that it's important to make sure, for example, the German supervisory board model has intrinsic corporate governance flaws. It's half representatives of employees who are paid above and beyond their salaries to be on the corporate board for the most part. The result of that is that, in my experience, very often these boards will take conversations offline. They don't want to have the full conversation as a full board. So we need to look at particular structural difficulties within the corporate governance. And then we also have to look at how the ethics infrastructure goes from top to bottom. And this really, I would boil down to one simple sentence, and that is that ethics needs to be integrated into every decision in real time.
Catherine Sender is Managing Director of Curtin & Co., specialists in reputation and community consultation who frequently work in the crisis management arena. As she explains, the problems faced by VW were sown, perhaps years earlier. So how mindful must corporations be about mitigating against problems?
You've got to have very strong mitigation measures in place. So something that one of the Volkswagen board members has said is that this was the mistake of several individuals and that they should admit culpability and take all of the blame, essentially. But from a consumer perspective and from the general public's perception, you would think, well, the board should be having a role where it's got checks and balances in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. So I think the technical aspect is quite important there, and obviously creating a strategy and a management program that ensures that as few of those mistakes get through the supply chain as possible. But as you say, it's about how you communicate what you're doing afterwards. So I think a very strong message came out from Volkswagen when the story broke on the 18th, saying, we fully admit that we've screwed up, I think was the term used, which is everyday language, and it was the right thing to do at that point. You have to say sorry, and you have to say it again and again and again. What I think they've slightly maybe misjudged at the moment is that they've got rid of the chief executive very quickly. That was a big show of strength from the company in one way, but also it now has deflected attention to Matthias Müller. So rather than creating a complete break from the crisis which has happened, he's now got to respond to a crisis which is still going on, which is a pretty tough thing to do as a new CEO.
And if we look at the national level and consider both the appetite for and impact of reforms, where is this debate at, especially in Germany? Susan Liatow again.
It's hard to generalize about Germany, and I haven't seen, at least, the kind of evidence that Germany is taking this on as a national issue or something that's critical to the German economy, as, for example, the Japanese leader Shinzo Abe has. So following a number of scandals in Japan, we saw comments, and very recently from Shinzo Abe, about abolishing things like cross-shareholdings that lead to bad decision-making, or like leaving a former chairman on the board to continue to influence through subsequent generations of board leaders. We also heard comments about reinforcing the whistleblowing. So this goes back to my comment about an ability to report wrongdoing. So, but he has made a national discussion of it, and I'm not seeing that in Germany.
So does reform have to happen on that level or on an individual corporate governance level? Well, much of it, explains Susan Liatow, comes down not to regulation, but to a more fundamental grasp of ethical responsibilities.
I don't think it has to happen. I do think that where there are specific features that cross all major companies, like, for example, the composition of the supervisory board, then it's sort of time to take a look at it. But I would like to emphasize one point, which is that many of these corporate governance changes are based in regulation. And to put it respectfully, my own view is that regulation is lowest common denominator. We're supposed to obey the law. Ethics oversight, and indeed ethics as a strategic opportunity, goes far beyond the law. So to me, these are kinds of nuts and bolts things, and companies can manage these issues whether or not a national leader takes them on.
Susan concludes by explaining the responsibilities incumbent on the board in terms of setting an environment to mitigate against and then to manage in the event of crisis.
Well, the board is vital. The board sets the standard in a number of ways. So to start, the board is going to set the tone. The board is going to set policy. The board is going to approve strategy. And so presumably within that strategy, there will also be features that relate to ethics and to regulatory oversight and to achieving strategic goals in an ethical way. But the board also does other things that can flow down. The board will oversee and evaluate the chief executive officer. And so the board can embed performance evaluation metrics that include ethics into a CEO's evaluation and expect that that will be the policy throughout the organization. So the board has a tremendous role to play.
Looking at this finally from an investor viewpoint, what are the takeaways? What are the key considerations, especially in the global mining space?
When you look across the global mining space, the stocks that have been underperforming the most are the ones which are more levered. So financial leverage is being punished by the equity markets in this very uncertain world that we're in today. So whether you look at Glencore, whether you look at Freeport, whether you look at First Quantum, if you have leverage, the market is genuinely concerned. So I think, you know, the real priority now for Glencore is to improve the structure of the balance sheet. You know, they're saying they're going to get net debt down from $30 billion at June to the low 20s. They need to take it lower than the low 20s and you know, properly address these concerns for the foreseeable future.
And if people want to get back into the territory, what do they want to see? Changes in the boardroom like at VW? Simon Smiles takes up the story.
When we approach investment, you know, we're typically looking at it at a market level. You know, we're allocating between US equities, Eurozone equities, emerging market equities, rather than going down to the company level. And I think what the events we've seen over the last couple of weeks, you know, and a further justification of that approach, I mean, pretty amazing stat. Across the S&P 500, there's not one stock which has a lower volatility than the aggregate S&P 500 index itself. there, the diversification across different sectors, across different countries, the diversification away from an overexposure to an idiosyncratic factor that could impact a company, serves investors well.
Much of what we've heard relates to making sense of turbulent periods. Is it instructive to look back and adopt a historical perspective? What about those recent examples, like BP's travails a few years back? Jason Corian is sure of one thing.
History is always a guide. Obviously, those who forget it are doomed to repeat it, as the saying goes. And in the recent history of corporate crises, BP and the Gulf of Mexico oil spill is always held up as kind of what not to do, with the CEO at the time saying that, he would like his life back, sort of seemed a bit annoyed with how much time this was taking. That was absolutely the wrong thing to do, and is now basically held up as precisely the wrong way for a company leader to act. So what Volkswagen is doing now is a bit better, in the sense that they moved pretty quickly to sort of clear out the previous management. The new executives there seem to be quite open and honest about what was in fact of some very deceitful practices. So it's hard to get over that, but at least you can come clean eventually about it. They seem to be quite transparent at the moment about trying to get to the bottom of this. So that should help. That said, the depth of what happened at VW is pretty severe. So it's going to be a very long time before they sort of peek their head back above water.
So looking back at these crises, and indeed through history at others, what can and should we learn? Well, better understanding the relative opacity of some big corporations is as good a place as any to start, says Simon Smiles.
When you've got large, complex, opaque companies, or companies which are so large that particular facets of them are opaque, these risks can manifest. It's very, very hard to identify them. However, I think it also plays very much into the increasing popularity of integration as a sustainable investment technique. So rather than the old school exclusion where you applied a values-based methodology, you didn't invest in firearms or alcohol because you didn't like them, the movement of the sustainable investing community towards integration, looking for key factors which could influence materially the future earnings or variability of earnings in companies, and incorporating them specifically into valuations, I think A, makes a lot of sense personally, but the events we've seen, the idiosyncratic events we've seen over the last week with some of these high-profile company issues, further vindicate that move within the sustainable investing community. For example, some of these companies are inherently opaque. It's very difficult for an investor to have a clear view on how a company approaches its emissions and safety standards. It's very hard for an investor to have a strong view on how a company which is involved in large-scale commodity trading is actually exposed to markets.
And that was Simon Smiles, bringing us to the end of this 52nd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.